Hello and welcome to Gegenpresse, the Bundesliga podcast live from Wembley. This is pre-game. I'm Manu Feit. He's Stefan Bielkowski. Stefan, where are we?
We are quite literally under the Wembley Dome, if you can call it that. I don't think they call it a dome. I think they call it a dome. But we've just walked the Wembley Way, I think it's called that. We were a bit worried thinking it was going to be pretty rowdy. And, you know, I've been to some pretty crazy rivalries in my time, thinking, you know, there'll be burned out buses and petrol bombs and things, but it's been anything but. It's felt very pleasant. It's felt like almost like a kind of music festival, hasn't it?
It really has. I mean, the atmosphere, I got here a little bit earlier than you did this morning, Stefan. Well, yesterday already, and I spent the morning walking around London, checking out the different fan festivals, and went to Trafalgar Square, went to Piccadilly Circus. Piccadilly Circus was awesome because there's that monument there, and the one side was taken over by Real Madrid fans, the other side was taken over by Dortmund fans. They were kind of chanting at each other, and then one corner had some religious guy chanting about Jesus. So we got a little bit out of everything, which was kind of a lot of fun. And yeah, it was the same all over London. A lot of Dortmund fans. I think there's 100,000 Dortmund fans in town, Stefan.
Yeah, when we first got into town, we noticed a lot more Dortmund fans. I'd say maybe like ratio 10 to 1 Dortmund fans, but obviously the closer we've gotten to the stadium, I've seen a lot more Real Madrid fans. Actually, when we got off the train, it was basically all Real Madrid fans. They were singing, they were going nuts. But the thing I've noticed is just how many fans were in the world we've seen here. I mentioned on social media that the train down from Scotland, there were a lot of Dortmund fans on that, some Real Madrid fans. But as we're outside the stadium here, we've noticed an FC Köln top, I've noticed a Palmeiras top, I've noticed a Independiente top, I think. So obviously a lot of Brazilian tops, which makes sense because a lot of Brazilians in London who, I guess, obviously have a natural affinity to Real Madrid maybe. So yeah, it just feels like a very kind of international event. I mean, maybe that's what these events always feel like, but it doesn't feel like a rivalry. But I think the good thing is we can say is that both sets of fans make a lot of noise, and it's going to be crazy in the stadium once we get in there.
Yeah, I think it's going to be absolutely nuts. So you can hear it in the background here already. It is loud. That's the nature of doing a podcast like this. There's some Real fans coming, walking past us. As I said, it's all been really, really fun nature so far. I think this is going to be a great venue. And I think it's called an arch, by the way, Stefan. there's some police on horses here. You know, I think that I just wanted to mention that because obviously this location got a really bad reputation from the Euro 2021 final, and I think they really drew the right conclusions, didn't they? Like it just seems safe around the city.
Yeah, there's a lot of police around. We were actually speaking to some people before the game about how we might know a few Dortmund fans are maybe going to see if they can get in without a ticket, and I think they're going to come to a rude awakening when they get here and realise that it's pretty tied down. I mean, we haven't actually got to the full stadium yet. Yeah, we're still on the way, but there's so many police. In fact, I was trying to take a picture of like the shot down the way towards the stadium, and I was getting quite annoyed because every time I looked down the scope of my phone to take the photo, I just saw policemen everywhere. You know, they just dot the thing so well. But yeah, it's super chilled out. And yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what it's like inside the stadium, because obviously like these fan groups don't really have any kind of animosity with each other, obviously, so it's going to be pretty chill. Everyone's pretty relaxed. London's a pretty international town as it is, so you know, everyone's just kind of going about their daily business and getting on with it. Even though we've seen like Dortmund fans on tuk-tuks blaring out music, and you know, there's a group of Real Madrid fans have just gone by with Mexican sombreros on. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if people can hear. They can probably hear the music over anything else, because it's not really, you know, it's not crazy fan groups. But I mean, we're 2 hours from kickoff, so I mean, there's still a bit away. There's probably quite a lot of fans already in the stadium now. So yeah, why don't you see what it's like inside the stadium?
Yeah, let's head in there. And I guess the next time, the next segment of this podcast will be from there. It's a little bit of a different show. We're doing this live on location. Yeah, inside the stadium is next.
No, it's what we expected. It's Terzic to a T. Hopefully it will do Dortmund a lot of good, because they know exactly how to play. All these players know exactly where to be. They all know what to do with each other in terms of positioning, in terms of how to play. I feel like that back line is just so important to have someone like Gregor Kobel in there. You know, you take a Riersen, a Matsen, even any of those players out for anyone else, I think it's a huge problem for Dortmund. But the fact that that kind of block of five players did so well against PSG, they know how to defend so well. Yeah, it's what we expect from Dortmund. It's no surprises, but that itself's such a huge boost for them, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I think you know, the good news is that no one got hurt in training. The one that always worried me is Gregor Kobel. He's fit, playing, Phil Cook up front. So Dortmund with a real number nine. Real Madrid not with a number nine. I see Bellingham is right behind Vinicius and Rodrigo. He's going to play, I guess, the same kind of role than he has played this entire season, kind of a false nine, number 10, which we'll see if that's going to work. I mentioned it in a previous show. His fitness has been something that I have found concerning. This is pretty much the expected lineup, isn't it? I also want to talk a little bit about this atmosphere here. The Dortmund fans have taken over to our left. That entire stand here at Wembley. The Real Madrid fans, not as many yet here, but they also made quite a bit of noise just like a couple minutes ago. It's looking great, Stefan. I mean, this venue is... This is my first time as media here. I've done a couple games here when I lived here and watched games. Actually, where the Dortmund fans are, I've seen Germany beat England here once. Taking in this facility is just incredible. I mean, this is going to be so much fun to watch later.
Yeah, I think I'm watching Sebastian Kehl walk across the football pitch right now. He's just came out the tunnel. He's walking off to what I assume is to do the TV obligations. He's getting prep from the Dortmund media officer, I'm sure. Don't talk about Mats Hummels, I believe, is probably the main thing after what he said pre-match in a very feisty interview. But yeah, absolutely. We've got the Dortmund fans to the left, the Real Madrid fans to the right. The Real Madrid fans actually just sang what I think is one of their club anthems that came on over the tunnel, and that was quite enjoyable to watch, actually. They all got very loud during that, and we've also had the Dortmund fans singing since they got here. Typical Dortmund fashion, they've been here for a while. They've kind of just kind of taken that over that whole stand, or as they would call it, a curve, I suppose, back home. It's been fantastic. But, I mean, in terms of the actual lineup, I think I'm going to be really interested from a Real Madrid point of view to see how well two players do in particular, actually. Courtois obviously come in for the injured goalkeeper. And obviously Courtois is a world-class goalkeeper, but he's not played a lot of football this season. He's not in the Belgium team, actually, at all. And because of those kind of injuries and kind of fitness concerns this season. So I don't really expect him to be the kind of main game changer here, but I'd be interested to see if he is a little jaded, a little tired. Even 10% off his usual fitness could mean, a change in terms of, how well he saves shots. But I think the huge one is actually the fitness of Jude Bellingham. He really has been the kind of powerhouse for the Real Madrid team. Yes, you have Vinicius Jr. Yes, you have Rodrigo, and both of them are, tremendous against Bayern Munich. In spite, I guess, of Bellingham, who I didn't think played particularly well in either leg against Bayern Munich. But, Bellingham's looked jaded for quite some time now. And if he does have another quiet game, that kind of nullifies a huge aspect of the Real Madrid attack.
Yeah, it really does. I'm just looking at the replacements here. Marco Reus, of course, on the bench. He's starting from the bench. He'll come on. He'll play a role. I noticed, too, that Dortmund's latest super talent, Kjell Vjetjen, made the lineup. So the bench, really interesting that he's here. At Real Madrid, Tchouaméni, he was questionable, right? Carlo Ancelotti mentioned yesterday in the press conference that he was training, and of course we saw him training, and it's getting loud. The Dortmund players are coming on the pitch. Let's give that a second here to just take it in. Stefan, that's always one of my favorite moments whenever I cover one of these games. There's obviously the moment when the game starts and it gets really loud, but that moment when you get that in German stadiums a lot, when the players come first on the pitch and the noise, and it's always the goalies on first, right? And it always gives me goosebumps. It's so good. But yeah, I was saying, I think Tchouaméni being fit for Real Madrid, saw the crazy statistic that they haven't lost a game whenever he played this year. So obviously that's good news. That's loud.
Let's just listen to the Dortmund fans for a minute. So to just try and paint a picture for listeners, Gregor Kobel's currently doing his stretches in front of the Dortmund fans. What a hero's welcome he's got. he's going to have to play like a hero, I think, tonight. We're kind of going to need Gregor Kobel at his absolute best. And at his best, he can win games for Dortmund. We've seen that, you know, in terms of his kind of world-class shot saves. I think we talk about on the show a lot. I think he's in the top-tier goalkeepers in the world right now. I think countless times for Dortmund, he's shown that he can be a difference between them grinding out results. And I think we're going to need a huge performance from him if Dortmund are going to kind of, I guess, you know, without being around the bush, really strangle this game to death. I think the kind of encouraging thing for Dortmund is they've got their back line in place, they've got their goalkeeper in place, everyone's fit, everyone's ready. But when you look at that Dortmund bench, they've got so many attacking players that they can bring on. Five or six forwards in all sorts of positions. You've got Marco Reus, who, let's be honest, will have to come on at some point. Mukoko, obviously, the usual. Malin, Haller, Bino Gittins, you know, huge array of forward players. I guess there's also Nemcha, who can kind of play a more attacking role as well. So if Dortmund can hold out, or even if they were to go a goal down, it's not really the end of the world, because they can throw attacking players on and really go for it.
Yeah, no, there's no way Reus is not coming on in this game, Stefan. This is potentially, what, this is his last game for Dortmund if he plays. He is the storyline I'm watching the most. Toni Kroos, he can win the Euros with Germany. You know, there's another trophy for him waiting there. But for Marco Reus, this is it. You know, this is the last big trophy. And he and Mats Hummels, of course, were here with Dortmund 11 years ago at Wembley, and didn't win. They were beaten by Bayern Munich. And so, you know, this is, I find that very fascinating that those two now have this shot at redemption. Edin Terzic said something very interesting yesterday at the press conference, that asked about that 2013 final, and he said that, well, you know, when you're a young player like Marco Reus and Mats Hummels were then, you feel like you will have so many more opportunities to win this thing, and ultimately, you know, they only got one other opportunity, and that's it. They had, you know, neither of them reached the final again until now, and so that is actually, when you think about it, something really remarkable. And, you know, for me, it's such an amazing storyline. That's the difference, I think, too, with Toni Kroos, because he's been here so many times. What, this is going to be his sixth if he wins it?
Just looking at the screens now, Jay-Z is currently doing a lap around the pitch, of all people. He seems to be here to take in the game. We actually saw clips of Jurgen Klopp is here as well, to take in, obviously, to support his former club. Before he takes off to Mallorca, apparently, on his momentary retirement, shall we say. But we probably have to wrap this up, because obviously everyone listening to this will already know what happened in the game, so we can't spend too much time talking about the pre-match. But we just want to give you guys a little taster of the pre-match atmosphere. It's beginning to get really loud in here, so yeah, we'll be back at halftime or full-time, depending on how things go. And yeah, we'll be back soon.
All right, halftime. Still 0-0. I have in my notes a quote from Edin Terzic: if you don't concede chances, it's much easier to win games. I mean, that's a very basic quote. And then he also said, you have to keep the opponents far away from scoring goals as much as possible. That's from yesterday's presser, when he was asked about the tactical approach in this game. I feel like they got that spot on. At least that's what I have in my match notes. Defensively, they have been excellent. They've kept Real Madrid as far away from scoring goals as possible. Vinicius Jr. had the one that they curled over the goal. Vinicius Jr. also had that opportunity where he completely knocked out Kobel. And that's about it. You know, Stefan, the only complaint I would have from the first 45 minutes is that Dortmund really should be up by one or two.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly how I feel. I feel like they basically put everything right. They struggled to put a foot wrong. I mean, you could obviously argue that maybe Adeyemi should do better when he goes past Courtois with that chance. Fulkrug, obviously, you know, if he was maybe a couple inches to the left, he scores a goal. But I think tactically, I think Dortmund have set up perfectly. I think performance-wise, I think their players are playing tremendously well. They're winning their battles all over the pitch. And it just feels to me like, more than anything else, that they've just kind of got this kind of belief in themselves that, you know, and equally, Real Madrid just looks so nervous, looks so scared. That might change in the second half when they're not playing with the yellow wall behind them, and these Dortmund fans have been absolutely incredible. I think I tweeted it through at halftime, or during the first half, we might as well be at the Westfalenstadion tonight, because it's been, in fact, I'd even go so far as it's been louder than the Westfalenstadion. So obviously the design of Wembley is that it just kind of curves around, the sound curves around the stadium, and, you know, it just echoes. And we haven't heard a peep out of the Real Madrid fans in the first 45 minutes. and it's all been Dortmund fans, and it feels like every time Dortmund attack, those fans just light up, and that Real Madrid defence just kind of goes weak at the knees. And yeah, they should have scored one or two chances, but they're winning the battles. That's the key thing. We said before the game that it will all kind of hinge on how Jude Bellingham plays in the middle of the park. We've not seen much of him.
He's on.
Yeah, exactly. Toni Kroos, if you can believe it, has misplaced a few passes. And, you know, Real Madrid are kind of really kind of outsourcing everything to Vinicius Junior on the left and kind of hoping he can make something from nothing. He's doing okay with that. You know, he's obviously gone past Reerson a few times, but if Dortmund can keep that going in the second half and keep creating chances, I'm pretty confident that they will be able to finish one or two of them. Because as things stand right now, Dortmund are playing as well as they possibly can and Real Madrid are playing terribly.
Well, that's really an important point here, isn't it? That we pointed out as we walked to the stadium that Bellingham would be significant here in this match, and we really haven't seen much of him. He doesn't look fit. He doesn't look like the player that really takes command of this game. Toni Kroos seems isolated. I mean, some of that is Real Madrid not being on their game, and some of it is Dortmund playing with a lot of energy here. We had Nico Schlotterbeck and Julian Brandt at the pre-game presser yesterday, and you know, both of them said like there's no point coming here if we don't want to win the game, and that's what they're playing like. They're playing like a team that really wants to come here and really wants to win the game, and so far they have done it. As we were talking here, we saw the chances go through on the scoreboard again, and we forgot Sabitzer's chance as well, which actually was quite a good strike. And we've seen them hit them before this season. That's my criticism. You know, when they won the final in 1997, at this point of the game, they were up 2-0. And really, really, you know, that really took Juventus out of the game, didn't it? And that is maybe my one fear and worry. We have to see how it plays out. But you have opportunities against Real Madrid. You got to take them. You have to put this team away. They might not be in this game right now, but they just need that one moment, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And I think, you know, I mean, look, Dortmund fans would probably have bitten your arm off for 0-0 at this point in the game and the performances they've been putting on, so I'm not going to be too critical of them. But that yellow card to Schlotterbeck feels like it could end up being a crucial moment in this match. He's been so important alongside Hummels. And you just kind of think that if Terzic begins to feel a little nervous and feels like he has to swap Niklas Süle in for him, or, God forbid, you know, Schlotter picks up a second yellow, Dortmund have to take off a forward and Süle has to come in, that's when I can begin to really worry for Dortmund. Because obviously being a man down is one thing in particular, but that Schlotterbeck-Hummels partnership is so crucial in the middle of the park. Equally, Marcel Sabitzer picked up a silly yellow card as well, and he's been outstanding. You know, I think the way that you can sum up how much Dortmund have dominated this game so far is just how much of the ball we've seen Julian Brandt, Sabitzer get on. And you know, if you compare that to Valverde or Jude Bellingham or even Toni Kroos, Marcel Sabitzer and Julian Brandt have dictated play far more than either of the kind of Real Madrid players. So they've been doing really, really well. The only kind of chink in their armour at this point in the game is those yellow cards, and if they'll play a part in the second half. I'm hoping they don't. I'm hoping Dortmund can go in and win this. I'm not ashamed to say that I'm unashamedly biased on this one occasion. I'll say to our subscribers in the chat that my heart is in my mouth every time Dortmund attack, and I'm sitting next to a Spanish colleague who's the complete opposite. If they were filming the pervers right now, we'd be opposite in reactions. And I can say that for much of that first half, he had his head and in his hands with frustration. So, you know, hopefully Dortmund are in the ascendancy. They can kind of push on in the second half and, you know, keep doing what they're doing without picking up any more silly bookings. But, yeah, so far so good, I'd say.
We'll see how it plays out the second half. Stefan, you are nervous. I'm sitting right behind Dan Wyden, a friend of the show who's been on a few Dortmund, an open Dortmund fan. And look at him. He's cool as a cucumber.
He's just a professional, though. That's what you call professional.
Total professional, not like us. So, yeah, shout out to him and his mullet. Anyways, that's it. We'll be back after the final whistle. All right, here we are, final whistle. Just wasn't meant to be. Dani Havel, 73rd minute, I think. And then Vinicius Junior, 82nd minute. Stefan, I put down in my thoughts piece for Gegenpressing that when you play Real Madrid, you have to capitalize on your chances. Dortmund didn't, and ultimately they got punished for it.
Yeah, they did. We're currently at full time here. They've Real Madrid have just lifted the trophy. They're all celebrating with their fans. As you can hear in the background, their fans are going absolutely nuts. So apologies if you guys can't hear us that well. They're also kind of playing the music of the Tannoy. The Dortmund end is beginning to kind of clear out a little bit. But yeah, it was a kind of bittersweet game for Dortmund in a sense. You know, I kind of said it full time to our subscribers that it'd be one thing if Dortmund lost that game after kind of playing poorly, but to play so well and still lose must feel, you know, almost twice as difficult for fans to comprehend. But, you know, ultimately, it just kind of shows the fine margins at this level of football. You know, Real Madrid didn't create a huge amount of chances, but the player who sticks it in the back of the net, Dani Carvajal, has now won 6 European Cup trophies, more than any other player in the world. No other player in the history of football has won as many European Cups as Dani Carvajal, which might be hard to believe, but and Toni Kroos and Luka Modric are level with him on that, of course. But it's those fine margins that you have to step up and win those games. And if you compare that to the 2 chances that Fulkrug had, the chance that Adeyemi had, obviously, in the first half, and, you know, in a game of this magnitude, you don't get 3 chances like that, miss them, and still get to walk away as winners of the game. So, you know, I think, I mean, I'll let you jump in now, man, because I've got some more thoughts. Obviously, I've also kind of lost my voice a bit because it's so loud here, but I'll let you speak for a minute.
No, absolutely. I mean, I had that sense that when Fulkrug hit the post, you know, that one goes in, it's probably a different story. Adeyemi had 2 chances where he walked on Courtois, and yeah, Real Madrid are the final boss in this competition, aren't they? They are a team that if you want to win this thing, you need to beat them. And, you know, they haven't lost a European Cup final, although that was the Cup Winners' Cup since 1983 when they lost to Aberdeen, right? You have to go further back for the actual European Cup, or the, what is now known as the Champions League, to Liverpool in 1981. So it's been a few days, and there's a reason for that. And they're just so very good at executing when they get the chances. And you could sense in the second half, they were getting more and more of those set pieces, and ultimately it was a set piece by no one less than Toni Kroos, right, who brought in that ball. And you sense that they were turning on the screws a little bit. Dortmund did score. It was offside. Niklas Füllkrug. It's just, yeah, I mean, if you want to analyze the game at the end of the day, I think it was just not enough in terms of finishing. And that is something that Dortmund will have to look at. I mean, it's going to be really interesting. I find it's going to be really interesting now how we're going to look at the season. Edin Terzic wins this. He's the hero of everyone. He hasn't won it. I mean, they're still in this competition next year thanks to Germany's overall performance in the Champions League. But now, of course, we have to look at Edin Terzic. We have to look at this Borussia Dortmund team. They can no longer paint over the cracks because they won a European trophy.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was quite interesting that when Dortmund went up to get their, you know, second place medals, that Brandt kind of pushed Edin Terzic to the front of the queue, and it was almost a sense of him saying, look, we didn't win the game, but everything we did in this competition was because of him. And I think that's probably fair. I think, you know, when the dust settles in the season, I think Dortmund and their fans will obviously have to look back on the good and the bad. There was obviously a frenzy surrounding getting to this final that kind of papered over the cracks, but I think this game in itself kind of underlined the kind of issues in this Dortmund team and what they have to work on. They're not a bad squad, they're not a bad group of players, but they're obviously missing 2 or 3 great players that can kind of take them to the next level in the Champions League. And I know that's obviously a difficult thing to say in terms of them just reaching the final and playing tremendously well for about 70 minutes of it. But, you know, the moment that really sticks in my mind, I don't know why, but I think it was maybe the 65th minute that Adeyemi picked the ball up and took it for a run in the Dortmund the Real Madrid half. And he didn't have anyone around him, and he just basically ran into 3 players. And I thought, that's a guy who's tired, that's a guy who's all out of ideas, but also it's a guy who's maybe quite limited in terms of his output and quite limited in terms of his, you know, reaching his potential as a player. And I thought he played tremendously well from a kind of defensive point of view and a kind of very productive sense. But, you know, Adeyemi was signed by Dortmund to be a technically gifted striker who scores goals, and he's been anything but at Dortmund. And, you know, it's obviously been of use at some point this season, but again, you keep going back to that chance where he missed in the first half, and of course Füllkrug chance. And, you know, I don't want to kind of pick on poor Niklas Füllkrug because I thought he gave his all tonight, but the difference between that and maybe a top class striker finishing chances. I mean, the header, for example, in the second half.
That needs to go in.
It has to go in. I mean, obviously, you know, Courtois is one of the best goalkeepers in the history of football, and he obviously makes himself huge and he knows where to stand, and that is a large part of why it looks like, you know, Fulkrug hit the ball right at him. But that's the chance that you need to score. So it's little margins, and you know, it'll be important that Terzic picks the guys up after this and they kind of build on it next season, because, you know, at full time they all looked absolutely devastated. And I thought it was quite telling that, you know, when that first goal went in, Dortmund just completely imploded.
Yeah.
And either because Terzic was kind of all out of ideas tactically, or just because he noted it straight away, but he made some big changes very quickly. And I actually said to you in our kind of WhatsApp chat, I was like, what the hell is Terzic's tactics here? He threw on immediately two or three strikers. Sebastian Haller was running around with a captain's armband. That was quite telling that he actually instinctively turned to Marco Reus and he wouldn't take it, which was quite telling. And then, of course, they had to eventually go... He had to run past Mats Hummels to give it to Gregor Kobel at one point. So, you know, there's a mental fragility to this team and a kind of maybe overall fragility that has to be worked on, because the nature of football is that Dortmund fans will, you know, they'll pat themselves on the back tonight. Some of them will go to the pub in London, some will go to the pub in Dortmund and say, you know, it was a good journey, we had a good ride, it was great that we got to the final, it was a lasting memory. But it won't mean anything if they finish sixth next season.
No, it won't. And I mean, that's ultimately it. This team needs to start winning titles. They now come close to winning two titles and it got snatched away from them in the last moment. That's ultimately really, really sad for Dortmund fans. And, you know, I see Mats Hummels walking over the pitch here and kind of that looks like goodbye to me, Stefan. We'll see. Of course, we're going to get a lot of news of that. There's going to be players that are not going to come back. You know, Marco Reus is one. Mats Hummels here, I don't know how you interpret that, but that looks like a goodbye walk to me.
I think he was off speaking to the media, so that's why. Should we maybe take a minute to talk about Toni Kroos before we wrap up?
Yeah, Toni Kroos, unbelievable. 97% completed passes today. We complained about him at halftime a little bit. I guess that was the only two passes he missed all season. So, unbelievable player. Like, he walks away from the club game at his peak. Created that first goal. Stefan, the only trophy he's missing is a European Championship.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's interesting that, you know, we talk about this myth about, well, not myth, but this kind of idea of Real Madrid being these kind of European Galacticos and how they always seem to win and how they seem to get off the line. But of course, that's only possible because they have the players that have the experience to win these competitions. And, you know, Toni Kroos just sums it up perfectly, I think. He's the kind of guy who doesn't freak out, he doesn't panic. And, you know, it takes a inch-perfect cross from him to kind of break this deadlock. In a game that Real Madrid had no right to win up until that point, he knows exactly what he's doing. He makes sure every cross is inch-perfect. And he knows as long as he keeps doing that, someone's going to knock it in. Because I think it was 5 minutes later, actually, before the second goal went in, that Dani Carvajal almost scored an almost identical goal from an identical cross from Toni Kroos. And then if you kind of compare that to Julian Brand, who I actually thought had a decent game, but his crosses weren't great from the corner flag. They rarely got past the first post. And, you know, I just think in general, Toni Kroos just exemplifies this Real Madrid team. You go down, obviously, as a Real Madrid legend, but that's the kind of nature of how Real Madrid are the club they are. They bring in these players, they develop them, and they can say to any player in the world, we might not pay you as much as Manchester City, you might not play in the most competitive league in the world, but you will get to play in Champions League finals, and you'll get to be, at the end of your career, someone like Toni Kroos, Luka Modric, and get to say, I've played in six Champions League finals, I won six Champions League finals. And that in itself is what continues Real Madrid's illustrious history in this competition.
Yeah, legenda, Toni Kroos, unbelievable player, and I feel really fortunate I got to see him play today in his last club game. That's the flip side. You know, there's a couple Germans that did really well in this game. Antonio Rüdiger is another one who had some really outstanding moments. And so, yeah, sad moment for Borussia Dortmund. Great finish for Toni Kroos. I think that's a good way for finishing up here as well.
How about we just finish up by listening to the Real Madrid fans sing Hey Jude by the Beatles? Oh, and as soon as I say that, he stops singing. Well, maybe you're better off if you just wrap things up as you always do.
That concludes this is our last main show of the season. A good way to end it, I think. We'll still be doing, you know, podcasts on the Substack, behind the paywall. So if you're not a subscriber yet, this is probably a good time to think about it. What we're doing, the transfers and the European Championships, of course. Taking a week off, I think, Stefan, I think we both deserve it. And then we'll be back fresh the week after that, gearing up for Euro 2024. So we'll be back soon. And until then, auf Wiedersehen.